everyone, and welcome to the January 8th, 2019 meeting of the Kitsap County Planning Commission. This is our first meeting of the year, and we'll call this meeting to order. Why don't we start with, as we customarily do, with introductions. My name is Kim Allen. I'm a planning commissioner for South Kitsap.
Joe Phillips, North Kitsap.
Tom Nevins, North Kitsap.
Richard Shattuck, Central Kitsap.
Aaron Murphy, North Kitsap.
Jim Swenson, South Kitsap.
Okay, this evening we have our chair is absent, excused absence with a sick child, and our vice chair is no longer on the Planning Commission, having finished her term. So in the vacuum that has created, I will entertain a motion for acting chair. I'm happy to perform those duties this evening.
I move that Kim Allen be appointed as acting chair, or what is acting chair for this evening's meeting.
Second.
I'd like to comment on that and get an opinion again. I mean, I have the same problem. The optics of this situation, more than anything else, you being a consultant for the wireless industry of some sort, not that it's not, I understand the law, how it's not a problem for the law. However, how does it look to the outside world? How does it look to people who might oppose whatever we come up with? I don't know what we're going to come up with, but how does it go down? I mean, I would like to hear from other people how they feel about that. I'm just curious.
Personally, I think in all walks of life, whether it's our daily job or this planning commission, there are potential conflicts, whether I'm a Republican or I'm a Central Kitsap representative. In all walks, we come to this meeting and set those things aside. We listen to people in an open manner. We provide information to the public if it appears to us that maybe our background has something of interest that the public should be aware of. But provided that we provide that information to the public, I think it's absolutely appropriate for us not to step down and not take part in this discussion based on those things. I can remember when I first joined the Planning Commission, our rules originally provided that there was no way for us to recuse ourselves. We were required to have a vote no matter what our prejudice, what our biases might be. And I think this commission wisely set that rule aside and said, boy, there are some cases and times where that doesn't make sense. But in this case, Ms. Allen having fully disclosed what her situation is, I think it's absolutely appropriate she participate, and I have no problem with her serving as chair.
I would second that thought process just in regard to the fact that I think it's beneficial for the public when folks that are in and around the industry of planning and land use, and in my case architecture, are here listening and being a part of the public process. I think that's beneficial to any layman in the audience that tonight or listens to a recording or votes in Kitsap. I think it's only a good thing. I also tend to trust inherently that if anyone is smart enough as far as wrapping their head around the law of when I do or don't participate based on what is fair and or legal as a public servant, trust somebody like Ms. Allen or Mr. Shattuck to know those parameters and where those lines are and how to navigate that. So I'm very comfortable with Ms. Allen as our chair.
Other discussion? Yes.
I've observed Ms. Allen in her role as a Planning Commission member, and I'm somewhat familiar with her reputation as a hearing examiner and attorney, and I must say I've been impressed with her professionalism and objectivity while serving on the Planning Commission, and I don't have a problem with her serving in this capacity.
Other comments? Other discussion on the motion? I'll make a remark before we vote. As has been discussed, I am a consultant for the wireless industry. I'm an attorney. I served in Kitsap County for a number of years as the hearing examiner here and in other communities. So I do have experience with setting aside all of my personal ideas to be a fair and impartial participant in a proceeding such as this. In this particular case, I have removed myself completely from interaction with my client, Verizon, on this code. They are in consultation with staff. I am not a part of that. I'm not a part of any of the day-to-day interactions that are going on with respect to this code. I want to see what the product is that comes forward, and I will consider it as a member of this community who has a vested interest in making sure that we have a fair and workable code in this county. So with that, call for the question. All those in favor of me being acting chair this evening, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Then we will move on. Prior to adopting the agenda, we have a procedural matter that we need to take up. The Planning Commission bylaws state that the new chair and vice chair elections are to be held at the first regular meeting of the year, which is this meeting. However, we are going to have two new commissioners before the next meeting. And so as we expect those vacancies to be filled and the Board of Commissioners to confirm those two new commissioners before the next meeting, staff recommends that there be a motion for postponement of the election of 2019 chair and vice chair to the next regular meeting scheduled for January 22nd, 2019.
I would move that we postpone the election till the next meeting.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes unanimously. Moving on to item C of our agenda, we have scheduled approval of the minutes of the November 20th, 2018 meeting. I'll entertain a motion to approve those minutes.
Move to approve the minutes of the November 20th meeting.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Any discussion, corrections, or additions? Okay. Hearing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes of the November 20th, 2018 meeting, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And that passes unanimously, which brings us to item D. This is our work study, continuation of our discussion on the wireless code update. Darren Gurney is staff for this, and I will very happily turn this all over to Darren to educate us.
Thank you. For the record, Darren Gurney, Kitsap County Department of Community Development, and project lead for the Wireless Communications Code update. As some may notice, we do have a slightly different format tonight. We are trying something new this evening with bringing the tables down lower to try and facilitate more of a discussion atmosphere during the study session. And to start with, I just wanted to review what we covered last session and see if there were any questions about that. We did review the work plan that went into the details about the meetings that we may have coming up. Excuse me. And as some may notice, we did postpone the public hearing from January 22nd, which is the next meeting for the Planning Commission. We have postponed that to February 5th, partly because we want to make sure that the Planning Commission and the public have an opportunity to fully understand what we're doing here and make sure you get materials in a timely fashion. Obviously, we had some materials a little bit later this week, and we should be able to let you review those to have more informed questions on the next study session. If you recall the last meeting, we also went into a presentation from some industry experts into small wireless facilities and kind of the state of where wireless technology is today. And going to a smaller wireless facility that is the trend for a 5G network. However, Kitsap County is still going to see some of those larger power constructed facilities because of the way that the technology works. And then finally, we also had a presentation from prosecuting attorney Lisa Nickel regarding the Federal Commission, Communications Commission, the FCC rulings and their history. And that gave kind of the background into why we are updating the code today. Those rulings regard co-location, small wireless facilities, and permissibility and timeframes that we're allowed to process those permits. And before I go too far into the code, which tonight is also supposed to be a walkthrough of the code with the Planning Commission, understanding that our staff report is going to be coming out after this meeting with more of the supporting analysis and detail that will help to understand the code.
Before you dive in, a couple of things. One, I understand I received a letter, an email from a citizen that expressed some viewpoints on the material that we're considering here. And so is there a place online where the public feedback will be available so everybody can see it? Can we get a web page for it or somewhere that?
Yes, we do have a web page set up for the project on Kitsap County. The code updates web page, which you can access through kitsapgov.com, go to community development, and our code updates web page. There is a project specific heading that expands into more detail about the project. And that also provides a link to provide an online comment. You can also provide comments directly to staff through emails or written correspondence. If we receive a phone call, we typically will direct somebody to the website to submit those comments. And that has a public-facing element to it, where when the comments are received online, you're able to view those public comments as they come in.
Could you put the link to the code update page for this code update in the online agenda? We have item D, the work session wireless code update. If you could put the link to the code update page, I think that would be helpful.
Okay.
Anyone else with questions or comments for Mr. Graney before he dives in?
Well, just off the start again, I also had a chance to read through Ms. Stocking's letter that she sent in, and I'm assuming that any inquiry by this Planning Commission on the health impacts of electromagnetic radiation associated with 5G system had been preempted, and that's not before this commission. So even if we wanted to look at it, our ability to do so would be preempted by
Ms. Nichols, would you like to comment on that?
Before we get into that, I just wanted to introduce at least. It's okay. So we have Lisa Nickel here from our prosecuting attorney's office. Jeff Smith is a planner with community development. He deals with a lot of the hearing examiner permits for wireless facilities. And George Geyer from our information services, he deals with many of the franchise agreement elements. So I will.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I jumped the gun.
You're correct that we are preempted from regulating and making sure that they meet whatever RF radio frequency requirements that the FCC has established. What we can do is make sure we can require proof that they meet that and then go verify. That's about our limit.
On that topic generally, I noticed that there are several communities that are challenging the FCC ruling. And I don't believe it's appropriate to discuss what the county is planning to do at this point if they're not public with what they're planning to do. But as the FCC has made its ruling, that the challenges that are coming forward kind of look like we might have some options or time depending on what the outcomes of those challenges are. Particularly interested in the dissent letter that one of the FCC chairpersons wrote that challenged the ruling, and I'm just curious what we can do at the present time to walk slowly on this.
I can give you an update. I did check the FCC web page for what anything that they did, because they did get a request for a stay of their ruling, and they denied that. They did get one or two petitions for reconsideration, so they're requesting comments on that and opposition and then replies. So that'll take a while before they decide whether to do any reconsideration, and if they do, what that will be. Then there is the federal appeals. I think there was five or six different appeals, and they were all recently consolidated in the Tenth Circuit. And so in a multi-jurisdictional panel that the Tenth Circuit's dealing with, and so the time frames that were in the Ninth Circuit, I think, have been expanded. So there is appeals, but they're not going to be decided anytime mm-hmm. soon. So the latest small wireless facility FCC order still goes into effect on 14. And everything else that was done before is still effective.
Any other questions?
And before I go into the code further, were there any questions about the presentations from the last session at all? I'm curious, did anybody go back to see if the BCAT video was anybody at all? Okay. Well, we did provide that in BCAT video for people to go back and look at the meeting and be able to follow through. We do have BCAT on for tonight as well. So when we get to that stage of trying to make sure we inform the public about the things that we're discussing tonight, they have access to the explanations behind each of these things. And my apologies with all the equipment here. I keep hitting it. So for the code structure, I did want to get into the basics of that code structure. I'm not going to follow through that at this moment. But the underlying theme within this code is to balance the economic development need and the capital facilities need for this wireless infrastructure and the desire to preserve the visual quality and the qualities of Kitsap County's character. So everything that is in this code is premised on that fact, and then also meeting the FCC standards that have been passed. With that in mind, the heart of this code is based around the permits, the type of permits that are required for the type of facility. Going from some of the most impactful, you go from towers to a non-tower facility that can be co-located, all the way down to the small wireless facilities right down there at the street level that are getting you that 5G. But the permit for each of those facilities is kind of the heart of this code. And it gets into a letter of exemption, an administrative conditional use permit, which is more intensive and allows more public input, up to the conditional use permit for a tower. And that is fairly consistent with what we have today. There's some differences, slight differences, with the current code versus what this is proposing on what is requiring those permits, and that largely is due to the FCC regulations. In terms of typical code pieces, you also have what is going to be exempted from a permit, what is going to be prohibited either by location or through setback requirements, the maintenance and repair, and non-conforming uses, those typical sections that come with a code. And finally, the abandonment and removal. That is another piece of those small pieces of code that go with it. The code itself was developed over period of 2 years, to my knowledge here. The people that we have brought before you were very instrumental in developing that code in the beginning. It endured a detailed review from staff. It also was circulated recently to industry experts for their comments. Tonight, we're really trying to flush out what issues the Planning Commission may have on a general sense. And that way, we can respond to those issues in our staff report that comes out for the next meeting. And for that next meeting, we do expect the staff report, the analysis, and a revised code for the Planning Commission. We sent you a preliminary draft, which is what we're reviewing tonight. With those initial comments, we do plan on making a couple of tweaks to the code that we would identify in the next meeting. And we will also try and get the links as requested. Let me get this back up here. To unlock our computer. Yes. Oh, thank you. Thank you to Amanda for making this work. So, in terms of going through the code here, and walking you through, the first place to start is likely with the type of permit that you're going to be looking at. You each have a hard copy of our proposed code, the preliminary draft. And on page 4, you'll find the table. Call it the table because it goes into all the aspects of what this code is. And we do have copies available. So this table is representing the type of facilities that we're looking at. It's identifying the number of days we have to review those permits and then getting into the type of permit that is there. From this table, there are other sections within the code that defines what is needed for a letter of exemption, what is needed for an administrative conditional use permit, as well as the full-blown conditional use permit. In terms of the facilities, you have two different types of action. You have a brand new facility, or you have one that is what we call co-located. And co-located is adding a new wireless facility onto an existing facility, and in some cases for small wireless, it can be on any structure. These permissibilities, you'll find the letter of exemption is consistent with a 60-day review. The administrative conditional use permit is with a 90-day review, and then the CUP is with 150 days. These number of days are part of the FCC orders, which is why they are laid out in this fashion. Commissioner Murphy.
In the executive summary for this evening, the first bullet point under background references, and I bring it up now because that's where, kind of where you are at, that in the case that the permit review timelines established by the FCC are exceeded, that it defaults to an approved permit status. What's the comfort level with DCD's, you know, stance on that thought process? I'm assuming it's not up for discussion at the FCC level.
That is correct. The number of days are in the rulings, the declarative rulings from the FCC. That is one of the reasons we are updating the code, is to make sure it is prescriptive for both staff and for the applicants, to make sure we get the complete application, all the materials necessary, and then also for the staff to be able to recognize through code what they are supposed to be looking at and minimize that review time.
Thank you.
Commissioner. Okay, I'll do it. And as I read the ruling, and as I read it, I kind of felt, I did a quick read, I kind of felt that there might be some flexibility on the tolling. If you have five installations only in front of you, and it's in a normal situation where we're all going to put on Puget Sound Energy poles or something like that, 60 days seems like enough. But if you have 500 all at once hit your desk on day one, and you have multiple locations and light pole installations and other sorts of things, you might be able to convince a judge that should any wireless corporation sue the county, you might be able to get away with a longer period of time. What is anyone else's reading on that?
I don't know. I want to be honest. I don't know about that one. But with my understanding of the batching, the wireless, the person coming in for that facility, they could still submit those 500 all on the same day, just under different permit numbers.
And it could be several different wireless corporations.
Correct. So it's not necessarily the wireless carrier who's submitting the application, but whoever's submitting the application technically could submit 500 of those in one day, and you'd still be held to the same.
And could you in 10 days determine that some of these applications are complete and some of them are incomplete? I mean, that seems like quite a chore.
That might be something we have to look into.
If you want me to step in, I read it the same way, but how do we put that in code, because it's going to be case-by-case basis. Mm-hmm. And so if there is something like that, you know, as a practical matter, we'd talk to the applicant and see if there's a way we can deviate from this. I don't know how best to put it in code, but if you find a way to do that, then I think that's defensible.
Well, I look at this, and the model I think we're all picturing is Verizon wants to set up this nice little small cellular system in an area so it comes in with 20 deals. But the other model would be something that we see in cell towers now with kind of American Tower or other groups, not the carrier themselves, but groups that are marketing and buying locations. And so I don't think the code requires the applicant, as you said, to be the carrier. It can be someone who just wants to get a system set up that they can sell to a carrier or pitch to a carrier. And I could see something, as Tom is saying, you have 500 people or 500 sites coming at the same time, because I want to be part of this market and resell it. Have we considered looking at pricing in terms of review to reflect the kind of impact this might have? And second, looking at maybe consultant groups that might be able to help the county measure or meet that requirement?
So, yes. There is, as part of the code, we are restricted on the fees that we are allowed to charge. It's not indicated in the code. Typically, we do that through a fee schedule. But the FCC rulings do have limitations on the amount that can be charged per permit, and that is for the one-time fees. As part of the presentation on December 18th, there's one-time fees that have a limitation, and then there's recurring fees that have limitations. I just want to clarify, though, in terms of these multiple permits that we're talking about. If you're trying to get a tower, then you're going to have multiple tower permits, and then there's 150 days for those towers. If you're talking about the small wireless facility, that's, you know, just the top of a light pole type facility. Those are the ones that are requiring less review time. If it's on an existing facility, it's 60 days. If it's a new one, then it's up to 90. So, yes, there are some difficulties in the logistics of handling those types of applications, but when we do get the tower facilities, those are going to be 150 days.
I'd like to speak to your point, Commissioner. A couple of things. One, I think, having read the FCC order a lot, I think that there is a provision that there is room for recovery of all of the county's actual reasonable costs. You know, there are some safe harbor numbers that are put in there as what are presumed limits for the actual reasonable cost. But I think to the extent that the county can document what its costs are to process these permits, that they can recover, have full cost recovery for that, and I'd like to have the code reflect that. I think that that's important. In terms of the batching and the large, you know, quantities coming in the door and the shot clocks, I think there's also, as Ms. Nicholas read it and as Commissioner Nevin read it, I think there is, you could defend a lawsuit, you know, that's if you miss that deadline. But the devil's really in those details. I think it is very case-by-case specific. And I think that, you know, we always have the option to reach out to the applicants and work with the applicants, understanding workload constraints and things like that. But I do know that also other jurisdictions are using, you know, like outside permit, you know, techs to come in, you know, that type of a thing would be something that the county could do to supplement staff to process huge batches of things that they didn't have resources for. So those are the types of things that I would like to see in terms of, you know, fee recovery that I think are reasonable and so that the county's made whole. You know, I don't think that the industry and certainly the citizens don't want to subsidize the wireless industry. And I don't want the code to reflect anything that does that.
So I have taken note of that. And we do have a section that refers to hiring experts, consultants in the code. I don't want to get down into the details, but we do have that, and that is in section 030 under item I. So you can take note and be able to look at that.
Other questions on the table? Okay. I have one more. But I want to make sure that everyone gets a chance. Follow-up question?
Are we going to work our way through the code?
Yes.
I've got other issues with the code.
Yes.
So just wait on this.
Okay. Just for purposes of the public knowledge, I understand there we have three instances where particular applications would go through an administrative conditional use permit process. What does that look like on a kind of nuts and bolts in terms of public participation, that sort of thing?
Actually, Jeff might be able to answer that best. Would you be
sure
up for that? Okay.
As far as the difference between the let's say, a conditional use permit, that'd be, as you would know, it would require review by the hearing examiner as the review authority. And require public notice 800 feet around the subject property. And then through this permit process, with conditions placed on the proposal, the hearing examiner place conditions on the land use proposal as far as dealing with compatibility. It's pretty much the same thing for administrative conditional use permit. There is public notice given 800 feet around the subject property. The proposal is reviewed for compatibility. Similar to it, the director of community development is the review authority. With that, the department will issue a decision and condition the proposal. based on those requirements in the Kitsap County code.
So is there a period for public comment?
Yeah, generally 14 days is what we do under, let's say, if we have under the optional determination of non-significance to 3670B, we do allow a 14-day comment period. And in most cases, if people are late or been gone out of town, we've been pretty flexible on letting those comments be looked at, too.
Because I understand that all appeals of these have to be concluded within the shot clock times as well. So I guess my question is staff comfortable with its ability to process an administrative conditional use permit in 90 days, including appeal time?
Yes, we currently do review conditional use permits within approximately 60 to 70 days, less than what Title 21 and procedural code. So we try to beat that code as far as the length of review. So 19 days or 90 days is comfortable. So
is there an appeal avenue from administrative conditional use permit?
Yes, there is. There's a 14-day appeal period after the decision has been issued, and the appeal is appeal to the hearing examiner.
Jeff, what kind of notice is required for administrative conditional use permit?
For just like the conditional use permit, there's an 800-foot notification boundary around the subject property. If there's a new tower or like a conditional use permit, then there's a public notice requirement for visual compatibility test. So they get notified twice for a conditional use permit. But for administrative conditional use permit, it's once. And it's through the paper as well.
Thank you.
I guess, Jeff, my concern is that if you take 60 or 70 days to issue an administrative conditional use permit decision, and then it gets referred to the hearing examiner for review for appeal, and there's a notice that goes out on the appeal. There's a notice period for the appeal, and then the hearing examiner takes so many days after hearing the matter. How does that all fit into 90 days? That's my question.
That would, based on that timeline, that would be pretty tight and still meet public notice requirements for the hearing examiner. And that would be very tight. I thought I remember seeing something in there that in the FCC rules about being able to stop the clock. But maybe that didn't stand.
If you would just flag that as an issue that I've raised.
Yeah.
You know, are we doing an issues matrix or something like that? Yeah. I just want to make sure if that is indeed the process, that logistically we can accomplish that.
If I may, I think it'd be prudent to go through the sections. A lot of these questions are answered by reviewing the document in detail. We're not going to get into that level of detail necessarily. I did want to run through these in a little bit more. So I'm on page 2, and going through, you have your sections, purpose and applicability. That section in under subsection A is providing you that guidance that typically comes from the comprehensive plan in economic development, land use, visual. You'll see at the very bottom it has a requirement for stealth technology as part of the purpose. That's part of the aesthetics. This section also goes into the exemptions. So if you're the reader, you're going through, you're being able to identify that I'm exempt from a permit, I'm not going to have to go further as I'm reading the code. I will mention as part of the exemptions, in some of our discussions, we may add temporary facilities to this section exempting a temporary facility for, say, a fairgrounds or a structure that is replacing a roof that has a facility on it, and you want a temporary facility to cover the gap that would be created from that. So there may be some temporary facilities added to this language, just to be aware of that. This section also goes into the prohibited locations and structures. This specifically calls out residential structures, historical structures. Tower-based facilities are identified in here as some of them being prohibited through guy wire towers. That's kind of a very specific one. Certain distances from the shoreline, the 200 feet, 300 feet from the boundary line of a park that's meant to provide a buffer, visual compatibility. Because there is this ability for facilities to be built on public lands with limited permit review, that's one of the reasons why we've added things like that, is to build into it an inherent buffer. And then you go into the other regulations that apply, the technical building codes, the state regulations, certain parts of Title 21 for permit application procedures, as you were just discussing. The nonconforming uses and structures, that is fairly typical of our language for nonconforming uses. There is item C, that is one specific to the FCC rulings that allows for the co-location of a wireless facility, even if it's on a nonconforming one. So that is one. There are certain footnotes through here that you'll see that it's pretty much something we cannot change. In the permitting section, it's identifying what permits are going to need to be obtained for what type of facility. I am currently on page 4. So the text leading up to the table is just identifying in a textual form what the table is representing. Going through this, a pre-application meeting on item B, just below the table, that is not a requirement. If we require that, that becomes part of the that 60-day window or the 90-day window. So we encourage it. It's not required. But if there's a dispute on any item that we say they require for an application, then they are required to provide reasons why, and we meet with them in a pre-application meeting.
May I ask a question here? Okay. You say we're not going to require that, but the clock starts as soon as the application is filed. Now, wouldn't it make sense to require a pre-application meeting in conjunction with the application, or at the same time, or make them right together, so that put the onus on the applicant to come in and actually talk to you and go over the application in the office, and so you can make a determination rather rapidly if it is incomplete or not?
That is something we can look into, but I'm not sure if we can or not.
We currently do that through our permit intake process. We call it triage, more or less. And people have the ability to submit online. And once we set up an appointment for staff and we review the submitted material and evaluate parts of the completeness of the application, we issue a letter of completeness, or we will make a request for additional information. Generally, when we've had pre-application conferences, we've not included that in the permit timeline, because that's something they haven't submitted an application yet. The way you approach that, yes, that would be part of that 90 days.
Okay. further questions on that? Okay. Before I move on to the item C here, we are still in the permitting section, but for each of these permit types, you also have the following section, which is general development standards, which apply across the board to any of these facilities that are going in. Beyond that, you have specific requirements for the non-tower small wireless facilities and the tower wireless facilities. So we'll get into those later. But in this section, you also have, I will start moving through this, though. Item C is for letters of exemption, goes through the details of what you would need for that letter of exemption. This is for that replacement of a support structure with identical structure, replacement of facilities that don't substantially change, and small wireless facility on an existing facility. There are a few items that are referenced in here from the FCC that are going to change, as noted. And that, I believe, is as of the 14th of this month. So in the next version, you'll see a reference change in that. For the applications on administrative conditional use permits, which you were discussing previously, you'll find that there is a list of items that are required as part of that permit. Examples are a site plan, landscape plan, those are drawn to scale, documentation applies with the chapter, things of that nature. This set of requirements rolls in to the larger permit, the conditional use permit. So these requirements are all part of conditional use permit as well as those additional items under item E.
And so we're at page 6 now, Dan?
What's that?
Are we at page 6? Is that where you're at on your review? I'm trying to make sure I'm following along here.
Oh, my apologies.
No. I got a couple of questions. If we're up to page 6 and if we're done with E on F, or I'm sorry, on E5, an FCC license, again, and maybe I just don't understand the industry well enough. I, again, would see someone who looks at Silverdale and says 5G is coming to Silverdale, and we're going to put these small facilities all over the streetlights and all over the stoplights throughout Silverdale. I think it would be a great business. I'm going to go in, and I'm going to put my application into the county to have 100 locations in Silverdale. And I'm going to go to Verizon and AT&T and the others, and I'm going to sell those sites. I've got a permit. Sell those sites. And so what keeps – maybe that's okay. Maybe that's the model we're looking at. But I see E5 requires an FCC license. So who is going to be making these applications? Do I have to be a service provider, or can I be a reseller?
I think George can answer.
If you look on page 5, item number, the applicant is not a carrier. We cover this one in detail because we have had companies come to us with that very idea. Hey, I can put up 300 towers and then make some money by selling space. But the requirements were so vague because we don't know which carrier, what type of carrier, what type of equipment they're going to need to support. So we have proof that an agreement exists between the applicant and the carrier. So on page number 5, look at line 31. If you follow the line, the numbers down the side, line 31, which is item 9, if the applicant is not a carrier, they have to have an agreement with who they intend to support so that we don't end up with companies coming in and just.
That's the model I've seen in the cell tower industry, of course. You have American Tower, you have Black Dot that comes in and it's buying up the tower spaces, and it's saying, geez, you know, sell me the tower and the right to the tower, and I'll resell it out to the carriers. And so
if Black Dot has an agreement with Verizon, then it's fine. We'll go ahead and we'll take it. But again, I just don't understand the FCC license. I don't know what additional step.
The carrier, it's the carrier's FCC license.
Okay. So I could use, as Black Dot, I could use the FCC, the Verizon's license, if I have an agreement with Verizon to provide cell tower or small cell service.
And what is it? What is the requirement to be a carrier? I mean, there could be some place in Iowa that has a carrier that serves a small town. They would be able to circumvent this clause.
Well, actually, what started this was several companies trying to circumvent the process. We had several companies that would come to DCD, but several companies that just went over to Public Works. We had several companies that just came to me. We had three leases in a single building, supporting one for IS, one for DCD, one for Public Works. And when that finally came to light, we're like, oh my God, those companies are coming to the county and trying to cherry pick and find the path of least resistance. So instead of making things harder by updating this, putting things in like that line item there, we want to streamline it, make it more correct. But we also know companies they've worked with, companies I've worked with, to be aware that when those companies come in, what to look for. So that's what came to light. That's why that's in there. So those smaller companies still have to have a tie-in to who they intend to support. We had one company who came to Washington State and said, oh, I'm just a utility. So we just want to put equipment up and towers up, knowing full well what they've done from the East Coast and marched out west, that's not what they happened to have done. And we found out they went by three different names. So we brought that up with not the intent of blocking anybody, but with the intent of taking care of the citizen and make sure that both the citizens and the rights of way are covered. And when those companies come to town, we're aware of it. We've got a procedure for them, but they have to meet certain items so that they can't just put 200 towers out and then hope somebody comes and pays them for it.
Did that answer?
Yeah, question.
Okay.
Darren, forgive me, but if we could go back to page 4 to the table. Small wireless facility is a pretty critical term, and I missed it, but I don't see a definition anywhere in the code.
Yes.
That could be a big deal based on the presentation I saw at our last meeting about all this 5G stuff that every carrier is going to want to put in their own locations because they said co-location isn't going to work. So how's that going to work? What's a small wireless facility that can go on an existing structure with a letter of exemption?
So you did pick up on one thing that I did not go into, which is for a specific reason. I did not go into the definitions because it is very detailed. But yes, at the end of the document, I put the definition section at the end, and that goes through small wireless facility. It identifies what co-location is.
Darren, if we're in alphabetical order, sorry for interrupting. I don't see small wireless facility.
On page 21.
Okay.
Page 21, line 29.
Okay. It's identified as a subset of wireless communication facility.
I see. That is correct. Sorry, that's why I was missing. And it also answered my other question, which was defined substantially. So
it does go into those definitions that are provided by the FCC, and they're identified as such with notation for those that we typically, for all intents and purposes, cannot change.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So we were just finished with requirements for administrative conditional use permit, got into conditional use permit, which, as you'll recall, is the tower-based facility. This requires a considerable amount of information in addition to those other two applications. This is on starts on page 5, it continues on to page 6. This is make part of this section is requesting that we get documentation that the applicant tried to co-locate as opposed to just putting up a tower. Another section of this is for propagation studies, which is to demonstrate the need for a tower as opposed to co-locating on other locations. And it's also identifying that if you can provide for future co-location, that is, it's part of the CUP process is to require that, that documentation. And again, the FCC license that Commissioner Shattuck pointed out earlier. I will say that there are some substantial comments that came back on a preliminary draft from the industry about this that we're still processing at this point. And we may see changes to this language based on those comments, but I'm not sure if it's going to be changes for this next draft. This also goes into item F, which is the fees, where Commissioner Allen was mentioning that they would like, that she would like to see the fees identified in here in terms of a resolution of if we cannot. I'll have it on tape to be able to take my notes, but recovery of actual costs that are reasonable. And that is one underpinning of all the FCC regulations is what is reasonable. That is a term that is used often. The noticing is consistent with our noticing requirements in Kitsap County Code. I don't believe there's anything different from that. The time for review, that's getting into that whole the shot clock and the tolling that you're talking about. So it's going to go into detail about when you're doing the co-location, if it's not a small wireless facility and you're doing the co-location, that's getting into, you can, the department has a certain amount of time to notify the applicant that they need more information to process this permit. And so the clock stops when the county provides that letter. When the county receives the information that they requested, that clock starts again, and it picks up right where it left off. So we request information on day 9. It starts back up on day 9 if we receive that 30 days later. And then it goes 9 until the end of that shot clock. And just to define it, shot clock is the permit review time from start to finish from when the application is filed. The other one is for small wireless facilities. That tolling stops, and then we're allowed to restart it after the information is submitted back to us. But we're only allowed to do that once. So if we have a second request for information, we don't get to restart that clock. Two, three, and four, those are going into the number of days that are allowed for permit review, consistent with the table. And the restart time and review, that is that tolling that I was talking about. Batching is what we were referring to earlier, which is allowing for multiple requests to be batched into one application. The expert item under item I, that is what we discussed about hiring a consultant to allow us to help and assist in reviewing and evaluating the projects.
And Darren, before you move on from that, because looking at that, that would be where I would suggest putting the full cost recovery. If you expanded that to call the title consultants instead of experts, and then added in consultants, contractors, or experts into the language there, then that would give you the opportunity to recover costs on if you hired additional permit techs, you know, on a temporary basis to do a big batch or something like that, that would capture those costs.
Okay, so under lines 34 through 38 do identify that we can hire a third-party consultant that will be reimbursed for reasonable costs.
Yeah,
so.
Instead of calling this section experts, I would just suggest it be broader so that you can make sure you can recover the cost for hiring temporary staff to process large batches of permits as well.
Yeah.
And make sure that the county...
I don't think you'd want to get in trouble with the languaging of the word expert. You know, I've had submittals be reviewed by a third party, and, you know, based on the level of comments or responses of somebody that you hired, gosh, I could hire an attorney and ask if they were an expert, right? And that just, so it's a protection thing, I think.
It's a little broader scope so that the county, we make sure that we recover all of the costs, reasonable
right.
costs that are associated with processing these permits.
Mr. Gurney, if I might.
Yes.
Just out of curiosity, I know the work study reference was for a timeline of an hour. If you read the whole thing, we'd be here till midnight. I'm a little curious to know if, out of order, I could hear anybody's questions. I know that Mr. Shattuck was waiting chronologically until
okay.
we got to that point, but I'd be a little curious for those of us that did get a chance to read the document.
Okay.
If we could jump around a little. Or
if
is out of order.
That's fine. It's up to the commission.
Yeah, I'd say that's up to the commission. Just we wanted to make sure and go through if we needed to.
Yeah, of course.
If you feel like you're comfortable with doing it a little bit more,
sure.
Jumping.
Targeted
discussion.
Review?
Yeah, that's fine.
Personal preference?
Well, Mr. Shattuck, why don't you?
I just had to, the one thing that struck me was on small facilities, the provision for tree trimming. And I wasn't sure we got information on the December 18th meeting about the impact or the need for sight lines and that sort of thing in our communities. For example, we're putting all of these on light poles and on street lights and signals. Are we going to have to cut down our landscaping to make sure that we're not interfering with signals? I know it's a fairly short signal. I don't know if vegetation or landscape has any impact on that.
I am not sure about that. That was...
Because our code requirement here is that we have to do tree trimming to comply with industry standards, not with our design standards. But I'm on page 13.
What page? 15?
Page 13, paragraph 4. That's line 7. So we have to do tree trimming around, and this is for small cell or stuff around that complies with industry standards. Is that going to affect our design standards for a place like Silverdale?
We do have industry experts if you'd want to hear as to whether that's even needed. Or you can just flag that as an issue to be discussed in the public hearing.
Yeah, I think we can flag that as something we need to discuss, and we can look into it further before the next session.
That was my main question.
Other questions or issues?
Did you need any explanation about some of the sections in any way?
I personally was able to, you know, read ahead during certain pieces of this, and how much of it is going to change based on FCC language on the 14th of January?
Not much.
Not okay.
The reference I was talking about was a numerical reference.
Okay.
January 14th is when these standards take effect.
Okay.
So essentially the code that we are proposing right now, we ideally would have had before January 14th.
Right.
So
I do have one question that I don't see addressed in this code at all, and that is there's a need for fiber optics that has to be strung to these towers. we're not addressing how that fiber optics is getting there. If it's a normal area with above ground power lines and stuff like that, I'm assuming there are rights for them to go ahead and string the fiber there. If it's a like several areas in Silverdale where all the utilities are underground in that, how do we address the fiber being put in? Because I do remember from the previous conversation that existing fibers were not going to be meeting the requirement for the 5G.
Right.
So do they have to, you know, what is the process for installing all the fiber?
Can I jump in here real quick? Just with an observation. The fiber typically would be provided by a third party, a fiber provider, who would come in with their own application to supply the fiber.
All right. Where in the code do we cover installation of fiber?
And that's usually in our right-of-way ordinance.
Okay.
I'm going to look to you to verify, but I'm pretty sure Public Works has their own permitting process for when you get into the right-of-way and dig. And
yeah, that's mainly covered under Public Works, the utility backhaul for all these small devices. So yeah, Public Works does have that. Different companies, depending on what company it is that comes to the county, they either come to Public Works or to me, to IS for technology. We try to work with all construction to provide pathways, but there will be some instances where they'll have to install below ground. That is a problem. There are several municipalities right now. University Place is one of them. They're having problems renewing some of the leases, some of the franchises, because they want everything underground. So the companies are fighting that. It's an aesthetic issue. Paulsville City of Paulsville is doing the same thing with Comcast. They want stuff underground. So it's like, who's going to tear it up? Who's going to pay for all that? So it becomes a problem, but it becomes a justifiable problem. But
okay.
It's under Public Works.
So it's not in the code. It's in Public Works domain.
As far as utility installation, yes.
Okay.
But there are other codes that reference if it's aerial, you know, separation between power, height above ground, you know, locations on power poles, on communications poles, where they're at, who fixes what. The guidelines are developed by PSC.
In areas that have been undergrounded, is there a provision in the fiber providers franchise that would address that when they would need to go underground versus aerial?
Normally, when DCD does larger projects, they invite the vendors and different companies to those meetings, so that's when those companies will find out or have the opportunity to discover that everything's going to be underground. So I know DCD does a very good job of, you know, getting the information out soon enough. If a vendor comes in later, then there'll have to be some way to handle that. But that doesn't have anything to do with siting in this particular piece.
Well, if a vendor came in to supply fiber to a small wireless facility in an area that was undergrounded, so they were going to supply the fiber to a light standard, that usually that's what remains after all of the undergrounding initiatives, then the county would require that the fiber be laid underground to that facility, to the light standard, presumably.
But depending on the installation.
If everything
else is underground,
exactly.
I would assume, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe another point of clarification is this is land use code, and we're still requiring a building permit for all the actual construction.
Other questions or comments? Darren, did you have other areas of the code that you wanted us to focus on or to highlight?
Trying to skim through and make sure. One area of code that we should pay attention to is the fact that we are prescribing requirements for facilities that are installed in the right-of-way. That is something new. that is meant to be prescriptive so that we can meet those, meet the FCC rulings. Another one is something to look for is the height of the towers that are allowed. The proposed code here, the preliminary draft, is identifying 125 feet and 20 feet over the tree line. It is possible that that may be increased because of the functionality and how wireless technology is working. It could be that that gets increased and becomes a performance-based criteria in terms of screening methods or using stealth technology of that nature. The requirements in the parks areas, that is something to look at as well. That was, the requirements are trying to make sure we maintain that rural aesthetic. So we put in there setbacks from boundary lines to allow for that. There may be chances to incorporate stealth technology to where you can't see it. So that setback isn't necessary. So that's an example of a performance-based item. So that might be something that creeps into your attention here. And the requirements for shrouding on like the not the antenna necessarily. We do include shrouding as a preference on the antenna. So like the monopoles that you see, the giant flagpoles, that's kind of an example of a shroud of everything. In circumstances, you can't shroud the antennas, but we're talking about the extra equipment. If you recall, the electrical shutoff, the radio switch. Shrouding of those facilities, it may be that we can't be as prescriptive as confining it to a certain dimensional box. It may have to become more generalized if the industry is saying that it's impossible to put something in a box like that. So those, I think those would be the main things to be aware of for moving forward.
And I think, you know, for the sake of BCAT and public awareness, it might be good for you to review a little bit with us. Is the language of substantially changed or a substantial change DCD language that we borrowed from somewhere else, or is it FCC and not up for discussion, so we can move on?
Right. In the document on page 17, you start with your definitions. You'll notice that this is a strike-through version. So this chapter is going to be strike-through, add, remove. The other sections were full repeal and replace of the chapter. So in this document, it identifies where we're expecting no changes. So antenna, that's a definition that is based in small wireless. When you get to
substantial change, page 20.
So substantial change is something that is not likely that we will be able to change any of that language.
So that's from FCC?
That is from FCC.
Okay, and is the same true when you get the definition of a small wireless facility under 17.110.770? Also true?
That is correct.
Okay. That's kind of what I was looking to lead into, you know, 10 or 15 minutes ago was, hey, if 97% of this is not up for discussion because it's federal law, which
right.
parts can we affect change on if we feel the need?
Right. So the definition, I'll try and put it simply here. The definition, the timelines, those are what are strictly mentioned in the FCC rulings. Whether or not we do conditional use permit, letter of exemption, those are something that the department is reacting to those timelines. General development standards, that's something that we typically are requiring as part of our current conditional use permits as conditions, so we're trying to put those into a codified state.
Okay.
I will try and isolate those which not be changed at all and provide you with a little bit more detail on that next session. And the ones we can't, we actually do have some flexibility with a large amount of the code that's before you. So there's a few elements that are absolute from the rulings, but a large part of the code around that is flexible.
Okay.
Yes?
Darren, on page 18, there's a definition of drinking establishment. The notion could be kind of attractive after dealing with this kind of thing for hours, but is that necessary? There don't seem to be any other definitions of
commercial. The reason for that is the numerical reference is 227 to fit in the distributed antenna system. We needed to use 227 and change drinking establishments to 228.
In other words, we ran out of numbers. We have
a lot of definitions. So 228 should be underlined.
Underlined.
In that.
Okay.
You'll see the installation truck stop there.
Right.
Combination facility.
Darren, it might be useful for the commissioners if you or Jeff could just hit the high points without getting into the weeds too deeply. The ground-based support structures to go with this, because there are aspects of this code that address not the things that are overhead, but the things that are on the ground that affect public safety, traffic, and that sort of thing. Could you kind of touch on just the high points of that, or Jeff?
George is probably more familiar with these ground-based one, but
or George or Lisa.
We're talking about if we're talking about micro facilities, there will be facilities to be mounted to poles, be near the ground or up higher on the pole. While a typical wireless communication facility has ground equipment that goes around the base of the facility, and it's subject to screening and has lighting and so forth. But I think Dave's talking about is the new requirements for the small micro facilities in the public right of way.
What the intent we had with reviewing this was any new equipment, and we specifically tried to draft it so that being a bedroom community in Kitsap, we didn't get the older equipment that was sitting in a warehouse or in a backyard somewhere that they couldn't deploy in a nice area in Bellevue or Seattle, that they wanted to pick some place here and due to size. But what we did was we just made reference to existing equipment, similar sized equipment. So there's no real standout. You're not going to go over there and say, oh, that's small cell wireless compared to any other type of required equipment at the base. But we really didn't spell anything out differently.
When you say at the base, do you mean on the ground? Okay.
Same exact requirements if there's a larger area or a co-located area, how it's hidden or disguised, any drive-up areas. We kept it all the same, basically.
Yeah, because I'm thinking in this region, typically the small wireless facilities don't have anything on the ground. Typically, there's not even a meter pedestal or anything.
Some might. There are several different types. So what's hard is we have a separate presentation with a communications group I work with, and they'll come up and show you one device, and it might not be the one that they select to install in your location. The next device is a little larger and does require something. But what they said is they could install this.
Right.
So it's the intent within the language here is just to make sure that it wasn't called out special, because it'd be several more pages and about a 20-more-minute presentation for Darren. But it's to have like for like, and trying to figure out how to articulate. We want the smallest, newest, best product, and not, I guess, cherry picking as well. So,
and staff would like to direct you to 17530050
page,
and that would be B1 on 12. That would be line 33. And it talks about location of all facilities related to equipment and right-of-way. that's about standards that George was just talking about.
What is the clear zone? Placed outside the clear zone.
Clear zone can be a visual like sight distance, being able to see around a pole or some other architectural feature. If it blocks the sight distance, or the traffic, then we're trying to prevent that.
Mm-hmm. It's also a term used in the roads department, the right of way for if you go off the road. Crash into something or it's a breakaway, so it's a safety thing for injury.
Something to think about as you're driving home tonight in the rain and the dark. And
thank you for those clear zones.
Mine's 50 feet from Tom's car, so
that's a good idea.
The whole goal is to keep the facilities outside the clear lane of travel.
Other questions? Any other areas that staff wants to highlight?
I did have one question for the Planning Commission. For your next meeting on January 22nd, we do plan, again, to have staff report, analysis, SEPA checklist. As part of that meeting, it was going to be to answer any further questions you may have after you receive that analysis. Would it benefit to have a quick presentation of images that correlate to these definitions to see exactly, you know, what is a tower versus a monopole, small wireless facility, what is ground-related equipment looking like? Would that be helpful?
Didn't we receive that kind of in our initial briefing?
That was specifically for small wireless facilities. Okay. So it didn't necessarily include the macro sites, which are like the towers we're talking about.
Are you talking about just having them for illustrative purposes here, not incorporating them into the actual code?
No, not incorporating into the code, but for the illustrative purposes, also for the public to see when we're talking about a tower, what does that mean?
Guide tower.
Guy-wired tower. So if we're going to get into, you know, the deliberations and we're talking about, hey, we think a guy-wired tower should be allowed, then we know what we're talking about.
I think that would be very helpful to be able to put those pictures up on.
Okay.
Especially with, yeah, a good chunk of this review discussion, languaging-wise, is about design standards.
Right.
Right. So I don't think, for those of us that don't work in the industry, I think I'd be okay with a little flipbook of what's.
The one thing I will not be able to necessarily do is say, here's a tower, this is what a substantial change will look like. I don't think I'll be able to do something like that.
But we know what 10% taller means. We know what
right,
10 feet
right.
wider means. So.
Do the math. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, then I will prepare that as well.
Thank you. So if I may add one thing, as Darren mentioned at the beginning, we were hoping to get some of your feedback and your ideas on this before Darren completes the staff report on this. If you have any thoughts or ideas outside that weren't brought up in this discussion, please get those to Darren as soon as possible. Darren, do you have a deadline by which you would need that in order to incorporate it into the staff report to make it available prior to the next meeting?
So, staff report we were hoping to have completed by Monday of next week. So if I could have comments from Planning Commission by Friday, hopefully midday, if not earlier. If it's on Thursday, even better. But
It certainly doesn't preclude adding more later on.
Right.
But we were hoping to just capture some of your initial thoughts on this in the staff report and address them if there was anything major that was going to be a game changer.
And that it would be helpful, I think, if you, the format that I've seen that I've found to be helpful is a matrix where, you know, this is the concern, this is the staff response to that. Any change to the code that might be proposed to address it, you know, something like that.
Right.
That's a helpful format. And then we can just go through the matrix and check the box on that. It also incorporating any citizen comments in that way too. So that, you know, what's the citizen concern, what's the staff response, and, you know, so that we can make sure that we've at least considered and deliberated on everything.
Okay. Yes, as the citizen, when the public comment period opens and we go into the hearing, then yeah, that's exactly what we will do.
Which that was my last point for us was the public comment period officially opens today. Obviously, with the staff report coming out a little bit later, we're not expecting a massive influx of comments for this first week, but public comment does open today. Online link is available to those comments, and if you put it in that form, it will be viewable to the public.
Okay. Good. Thank you. Send that link around to all of us?
Yes,
in an email.
I will send that link.
Other questions, comments?
I just said thanks for the hard work.
It was primarily these guys.
The thank is around the table.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Thank you for your patience.
You're doing a great job. Okay, well then that brings us, I think, to the end of item D, which is the wireless code update. We'll hear more at our next meeting. Thank you very much. Next up is Mr. Bolger with an administrative update.
Yep. Good evening. And Happy New Year. For the record, I'm Jim Bolger with the Department of Community Development. Quick administrative updates, as you were discussing earlier in your meeting. On Monday the 14th at the board's regular meeting, they'll be considering the appointment resolutions for two more members to the Planning Commission. One of those for the Central District, or District 3, is Mike Eliason, who was previously the executive officer for the Kitsap County Board of Realtors, so he's got a strong background in land use within the county, so I think he'll be a great addition to the Planning Commission. And then in District 2, which is the South District, we have Shelley Knipe, who also has a long history of practice in the field of land use, coming from the prosecutor's office, where she was a civil deputy prosecuting attorney. Is that right, Lisa? Mm-hmm. One of your colleagues? Shelley recently retired, but she has a fantastic working knowledge of the Growth Management Act and the history of planning, land use planning within the county. So we're really excited for those two new appointments, and we think that they'll complement the fantastic board that we already have. So we're looking forward to that. One other item that the board will be considering on Monday is they will be affirming an appointment that they made at the end of last year that effectively makes me the interim director for the Department of Community Development as of December 31st, which was Director Garbo's last day on the books. We have so much of our code that really kind of delegates decision-making authority to the director of the department or their designees that we needed to have a director in place. We still don't know at this point what the board's final decision is going to be in terms of setting leadership for the department into the future. We hope to know more of that in the coming weeks. But for the interim, I'm the guy. In light of that, my role may shift with having to take on broader responsibilities within the department. So Dave and I are still kind of working out how liaisoning with the Planning Commission will continue into the future. As of right now, I'll probably share that responsibility with Dave. But I just wanted to make the Planning Commission aware of that. And then finally, next up, the next kind of item coming down the pipeline for the Planning Commission's consideration is an issue that is already kind of percolating through the community. It's the transfer of jurisdiction, which we are one of the last counties to actually go through this process and updating our codes for some of the forestry applications that come in, particularly those related to conversion option harvest plans. So you'll be seeing that, and we'll begin the work study process with you all at the coming meeting. So look forward to that, one right after another. So we're going to start off fast. And with that, that's all I have. I'm happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bolger. Any questions? Hearing none. Move on to our final agenda item, which is anything else for the good of the order? Hearing none. With that, we will adjourn. Thank you.
Thank you.
How was the...